listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hello, I'm Martha Plimpton, and I've kidnapped Leonard Lopate, and I'm hiding him in an underground bunker somewhere outside the city in an undisclosed location so that I could commandeer his radio show. And I'm having a great time doing it. So let's get on with it, shall we? Political wrangling over abortion rights has been at the forefront of the political conversation in recent months, and a number of states with Republican-controlled legislatures have passed a lot of new limits on the procedure. We're joined now by someone I admire a great deal, an excellent writer, Amanda Marcotte. She writes for Slate's The XX Factor, as well as RH Reality Check and elsewhere, other outlets. And I'm pleased to welcome her to The Leonard Lopate Show. Hello, Amanda.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So last night, it's been a pretty crazy few weeks, pretty crazy couple of years, actually. But let's just talk about last night, the Texas House provisionally approved some very tough new abortion restrictions in that state. And the Texas Senate is expected to approve the bill. Can you explain to us what kinds of provisions are in this legislation?
Sure. I mean, I think the ban on abortions after 20 weeks is getting the most attention. But in a lot of ways, what's more serious is there's a requirement that doctors have to have, clinics have to be able to meet ambulatory surgical center standards. This would wipe out 37 of 42 clinics that provide abortion mm-hmm. in the state of Texas, or at least make them not provide abortion.
Mm-hmm. And it would limit, I think it would limit it to five remaining clinics in the state of Texas, period.
Yeah.
And mostly in eastern parts of Texas and mostly in urban centers. So that would leave a lot of rural women and poorer women sort of out of the loop in terms of health care. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, all of West Texas, basically, the panhandle, the western part of the state, the Rio Grande Valley, all of that would be completely without an abortion clinic. And we're talking, you know, it's an 8-hour drive from El Paso, Texas, to San Antonio, Texas, where the closest mm-hmm. abortion clinic would be.
Republican-controlled state legislatures have been passing a number of anti-abortion laws in recent years. And are they all basically formed around the same essential template?
Yeah, I mean, I like to joke that they're kind of a monkey see, monkey do kind of group of people. Mm-hmm. Like one, this really kind of, I think it really took off once Virginia realized that by passing these ambulatory surgical center laws, they could wipe out a bunch of clinics in their state. And they've been using kind of sleazy methods to, pressuring the state board of health as opposed to passing it directly through legislation. Mm-hmm. This is really common, I've noticed, with the anti-choice legislators, is they're finding backdoor ways of getting these regulations through.
And at the same time, many of these restrictions also accompanied attempts to rein in or limit the availability of contraception or funding for sex education, two things that you would think would actually help reduce the number of abortions?
Yeah, Rick Perry is particularly aggressive on this front. He was basically the first successful Republican governor to defund Planned Parenthood really significantly by cutting off their access to Medicaid for mm-hmm. contraception services and things like that. Already the unintended pregnancy rate in Texas is going up because of this.
Mm-hmm. In North Carolina, the state Senate passed a similar law this week. So it's really going on all over the country. And this law purports to tighten safety standards on abortion clinics in a similar way to the Texas bill. Why have legislators focused on these kinds of provisions, these kinds of trap laws, as they're called?
Mostly because they can sell them as women's health measures. I don't know that anybody actually believes that, but it's become apparent, I think, to the anti-abortion movement that their focus on claims that the fetus is a person with rights really is limited. You're only going to convince a certain number of people with that argument. So now they're trying things like, we're passing these laws because abortion clinics are unsafe for women. And that's ridiculous because what's really unsafe for women is going on to the black market for abortion.
Right. And North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory has actually criticized the state Senate for pushing through this legislation in relative secrecy. It's been tacked on to an unrelated bill at the last minute, and there's been no hearing. And the North Carolina Republican House leaders have slowed down the process a bit. Do these delays make it unlikely that the bill will pass? Do they We
hope so.
Challenge?
We hope so. I will say one thing that has been like a slim thing of hope is that even with Republican dominated legislatures, the expense of and the hassle of some of these abortion restrictions sometimes slows them down or causes them to sort of die on the vine, mm-hmm. which is why they're going with these backdoor methods.
Right. So now moving on to Wisconsin. Another state where the governor has recently signed legislation requiring the doctors who perform abortions have admitting privileges at local hospitals. It's, you know, it's the same template again, and mandating as well that women get an mandatory ultrasound before having the procedure. But on Monday, a federal judge issued a temporary restraining order on that law. Aren't many of these laws going up in front of courts and being significantly challenged or slowed down in the court?
Yeah, the admitting privileges thing is something that really kind of started in Mississippi, and all mm-hmm. it's been hung up over and over again because it becomes impossible for the people passing it to defend their justification for it in court. So in Mississippi, they said that they passed the admitting privileges law, which requires a doctor at a clinic to be able to admit patients at a nearby hospital, which they usually don't do because abortion clinics don't send patients to hospitals. Mm-hmm.
I think it's something like 0.01% complication rate for abortions.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Most hospitals require you to have like at least 5 or 6 patients a year you admit, which right. abortion clinics can't provide.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it's so safe.
Right.
And so it becomes so obvious in court that this was just to shut down the clinics that it's clearly in violation of Roe versus Wade. So even conservative judges right. have to say, come on.
Mm-hmm. And along those lines, you know, states are allowed to regulate abortion under Roe v. Wade, but federal courts have found that they can't pass laws which make abortions impossible to obtain. So why are states passing laws which seem to test these legal limits? Ultimately, aren't they trying to get to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, ultimately. Everyone's playing a game of who can get to the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. and Texas really wants to win it because they were the state that Roe was decided on.
Do you think the current makeup of the Supreme Court would end up giving a favorable ruling at this point?
I'm really afraid that Justice Kennedy is anti-abortion and anti-choice. I mean, he voted at the most recent abortion decision, he voted for the anti-choice side. So there is very real danger that Roe could be overturned.
Kennedy is a very interesting justice because he rules in favor of privacy when it comes to homosexual issues, like let's talk about DOMA or Prop 8, Lawrence v. Texas. But when it comes to women's privacy, he doesn't quite have the same. doesn't seem to think it merits the same legal standards. Have there been legislative attempts as well to reduce the availability of the abortion pill? Aren't nearly 20% of abortions now done with the pill?
Yeah, quite a few of them are, which is one of the reasons that abortions are happening earlier in pregnancies than they used to. North Carolina would be a really good example. Part of their bill is they want the physician to be present when the abortion happens, which is like not possible with the abortion pill mm-hmm. or not recommended anyway. Physicians prefer women to go home and take the pill at home.
Right. So back to North Carolina, their bill also bans abortion coverage on insurance taking part in the state's health exchange. As the country starts to transition into this new health care system under the Affordable Care Act, are we likely to see more bans of this kind, do you think?
Yeah, and it's troubling because while most women don't pay directly with their insurance for abortion, quite a few do. And that would just reduce the access, particularly for middle-class women mm-hmm. who have insurance. Unfortunately, already lower-income women that are on Medicaid don't get coverage.
Mm-hmm. Ohio Governor John Kasich actually signed a number of anti-abortion measures that were part of the budget bill. So they weren't really even up for debate, which was clever. And Ohio and other states we've been talking about, Wisconsin, North Carolina, are swing states. Is that a coincidence, do you think?
I do not think that's a coincidence. I think that Republicans are trying to get these laws passed before they're booted by the voters. They're trying their darndest, honestly.
Mm-hmm. This is Martha Plimpton, and I'm speaking with Amanda Marcotte of Slate all about the recent issues surrounding abortion access and other reproductive health rights. The group Moral Monday has taken a major role in protesting the bill in North Carolina. This week, they're all about abortion rights and a number of other policy decisions around austerity and voting rights that they've focused on. Why hasn't that group gotten more national attention, do you think?
Mostly because everybody's looking at Texas right now. I think the mainstream media only has so much bandwidth to cover protest movements, so they tend to focus geographically in one area. You know, 5,000 people turned out at the protest last week in Texas, and that's the kind of attention-getting protest that's going to drown out coverage of all others.
Right. So Texas State Senator Wendy Davis, who brought all that big coverage and all those protesters to Texas, she was catapulted to national attention after her incredible 11-hour, some say 11, some say 13-hour, filibuster of anti-abortion legislation. Do you believe that that, in its own way, sort of inadvertently set a precedent in terms of what's required to get media attention on this issue? The bill, as we mentioned, was reintroduced to a special legislative session and passed this week during the House session.
You know, I think it's one of those things where it's difficult for journalists to cover the abortion battle because there's so many bills coming out and as so many states that it becomes repetitive. And yes, unfortunately, that causes pro-choice activists to have to find new and novel ways to get attention.
Right.
And it's just part of the system, and it's very difficult for them to get around that.
I guess we just have to find a way to, you know, do statewide filibusters in every state.
But then that could be repetitive, too.
Yeah. Rick Perry was very aggressive in his support of this bill. Is that, do you suppose, about positioning for 2016?
You know, I really don't know what Rick Perry's game is. He says he's not going to run for president again, but he's also kind of teasing it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly clear that he basically is the governor of Texas because he's been able to win the primaries based on his religious right credentials. Whatever his move is next, I think he realizes that the only way he can make it is to be a Rick Santorum-style religious conservative. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he's doubling down. But I can't predict right now what his ambitions are.
But we've seen, for example, in the 2012 election, that kind of rallying up the base, it may work in primaries, but doesn't really translate in national elections. But there was a major gender gap between Democrats and Republicans in the last election. And do you think that was driven in part by these laws and some, well, I mean, obviously by some major gaffes by Republican lawmakers?
I think so. I used to be one of the most firm on saying that there isn't a gender difference in the pro-choice, anti-choice vote. But I do think once you start to attack contraception, women start to crystallize that this is about misogyny and sexism. And I think that hurts. I also think that a lot of it is the austerity thing, the voting rights thing. Women tend to be a lot stronger on those issues than men.
And aren't they sort of galvanizing these measures? Aren't they big sort of fundraisers for Democrats ultimately?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of wealthy women who are willing to write checks based on this issue.
Yeah. Speaking of 2016, Florida Senator Marco Rubio is weighing whether to sponsor an abortion bill in the Senate, which would limit the procedure to the first 20 weeks after fertilization. The House of Representatives recently passed its own bill to limit abortions largely along party lines without a single female Republican on the House Judiciary Committee, I might add. Even if it did pass, it's extremely unlikely the president would sign it. So are most of these laws and proposed laws about posturing for the primaries primarily?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely it. I think right now maybe we're looking at a Republican Party that realizes that it can't get women's vote, it can't get racial minorities' vote, it can't get poor people's vote, it's losing the middle class vote. So they're just basically hoping they can sort of shake the trees and some more religious right voters will fall out.
And Americans have moved to the left over the last few years on social issues like gay marriage and marijuana legalization and realize they seem to really have nothing to do with each other. But why hasn't the support for abortion rights also grown over the same period? And do you think on some level that this debate is kind of frozen in place?
I think that it is frozen in place, but one of the reasons is that Americans are far more to the left on the abortion issue than the press generally gives them credit for. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem is that we don't poll very well on this, but when you look at polls that actually ask about specific restrictions that people support on abortion, you find that people are a lot more pro-choice than you would think.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Peter Carmel, we've noticed there's been a little bit of silence from the larger medical community when it comes to a lot of these more public arguments that have been going on. But recently, Dr. Peter Carmel of the AMA, American Medical Association, has actually finally come out and made a statement. And he said that, as quote, as physicians, we have to oppose all interference that we possibly can by politicians in the practice of medicine. Do you think the AMA is finally ready to take a more aggressive stand on women, protecting women's health and talking about these issues? And why do you suppose they've been so slow to do so up until now?
Well, one of the reasons is medical associations have members that are liberal and conservative, and they feel like they should be able to speak for both. It is true that doctors are far more likely than average Americans to be pro-choice for those reasons. Mm-hmm. And they know this, but yeah, they're a little bit shaky because they don't want to create controversy within their ranks. But it's not just the AMA that's decided that this enough is enough and they're speaking out. The Texas Medical Association has been doing this as well. And that's, talk about a kind of conservative organization.
Yeah.
Doctors tend to be a little bit like old school Republican, just businessmen. But mm-hmm. on this issue, they're very liberal.
All right. Well, I've been speaking with journalist Amanda Marcotte. She writes for Slate's The XX Factor. Amanda, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.